Hi, this is WWR, Windwise Radio.
Coming to you from high atop a not-so-windy mountain in the Berkshires of western Massachusetts.
Good evening, this is Harley Keisch. I'm with you again tonight on a Sunday evening, and I'm very happy to welcome all of our listeners. And I want to say a special hello to Lisa. Good evening, Lisa.
Hi, Harley. How are you?
I'm well. I'm very well. Happy, I guess I can't say this to you, but happy Father's Day to all of the fathers out there. And if you're listening and you're taking a little bit of time off from the kids and all those obligations, we really appreciate you doing that. I want to send a happy Father's Day out to my father, that's out there in Oregon. I hope he's fighting wind turbines out there. I don't know. I'll have to give him a call later. Tonight we have a very, very busy lineup of very disparate things, but I think they'll tie together in some ways. What's up first for us, Lisa?
Well, we're talking with Laura Jackson from Pennsylvania. She's Laura, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello. How are you tonight?
Good. Thank you for inviting me.
We're happy to have you. Laura's going to be talking to us about a project in Pennsylvania that was canceled. It was a Gamesa wind project. Gamesa is a large turbine manufacturer, also builds wind projects. And that's very excited to hear that, to hear what is happening, how this came about, and the history of this project.
Yep. And then after that, we're going to hear from Bernie Hagen. For those who listened last week, Bernie dialed in from Minnesota, where he lives. He lives sort of in the southern part of Minnesota, right on the border of Iowa. And he has a very interesting story to tell about what happens to veterans like him when the politicians don't really care. And it's a sad story, but I think it's an important one, and there's some good lessons there. And then after that, we have in our third segment, we're going to be talking with Josh Van Camp. Is that correct, Lisa?
That's correct.
And Josh and Lisa and I are going to talk about the American Wind Energy Association, the production tax credits, and a bunch of other things of national significance. And I hope everybody will stick around for that. So I want to jump right in with Laura. Good evening, Laura.
Good evening.
So I want to personally congratulate you and thank you for the hard work that you guys are doing there in Pennsylvania. In the last month, 2 months, you've killed off three large wind turbine projects, and I think we all owe the country, if not anybody else, the mountains of Pennsylvania and the creatures there that live on those mountains deserve a big round of applause for what you've done. And I guess it's never one person. Can you let us know who should we send our thanks and thanks to? I mean, who was involved? Who are the people that fought this fight?
First of all, we do have a grassroots nonprofit group called Save Our Allegheny Ridges, and those are folks, just regular people who are landowners, who might be farmers or business people. We have scientists, veterinarians involved. So we do have a grassroots nonprofit group. And then in particular for the Schaefer Mountain project, which we're going to talk about most of all, there are a number of people who work tirelessly on that. And I'd like to give a shout out to Jack Bouchon, John and Karen Sedawar, Joe Kaminsky. They are landowners who could have signed leases and did not, and they were very instrumental in the fight against this project. Also, Dr. Tom Dick, a local veterinarian who runs the Allegheny Front Hawk Watch, was very much involved in this fight. Dr. Dennis McNair, who's the president of the Allegheny Plateau Audubon Society, was also very active in this. Another local veterinarian, Jeff Payne, also tirelessly warrior on this. And then importantly, too, I'd like to really thank Kim Van Fleet. She, at the time, was a biologist for Audubon, Pennsylvania, and really took this whole issue to heart. She's concerned about impacts to bats and birds, and she did a lot of research and went around to a lot of the Audubon chapters in Pennsylvania, educating them on issues with wind, and particularly on Schaefer Mountain. So those are just a few of the people who really were instrumental in this victory.
Well, thank goodness for all of you guys. I mean, I can't say enough. Anytime that there's a large victory like this, I just want to lift my glass, metaphorically or whatever, virtually, and toast you all for everything you've done. I know it's a hard slog. I know that the odds are stacked against you. Certainly, the resources are stacked against you, and it comes down sometimes to just the perseverance of good people. And like you said, some of these landowners who could have easily, if they were greedy people, if they were short-sighted mm-hmm. people, could have easily just have said, oh, yeah, I could use a few thousand dollars a year. Instead, they've done something wonderful. So I congratulate all of them. So I guess my first question about, there were three projects. There were two projects that was Iberdrola, which is a large Spanish energy company, and then Gamesa, or some people call it the Hot Gamesa, a hot mess, also I think based in Spain. But Gamesa was supposed to be 30 turbines on Schaefer Mountain. So how long was the battle with Schaefer Mountain? Can you just give us a little bit of the lay of the land how this thing happened?
Sure. The public became aware of it when Gamesa actually started trying to get some leases from landowners, and that was in June of 2006. And one of the first landowners that was approached was Joe Kaminsky, and he definitely was opposed to this project from day one. So he very quickly got this in front of the press and in front of other people, other landowners. And so a number of us became aware of it in the summer of 2006. And then additionally, there were people who had signed leases, and there were rumors floating around. But one of the other big landowner was Berwind, and this was a corporation that owned quite a few acres on the Allegheny Front. And this wind project was slated for the Allegheny Front, which is an escarpment that runs from south central Pennsylvania down into West Virginia. We don't really have that great of wind resources in Pennsylvania, but this is one of the better areas because of the elevation. So when these landowners started talking about the leases and the fact that some of them were not going to sign leases, that kind of made its way towards Save Our Allegheny Ridges, which was this group that we had formed, because the Dunning Mountain Wind Project actually was proposed and made public back in the fall of 2005. So that's what
and
motivated...
And that was the impetus for the formation of SOAR?
Right, right.
Okay.
And what was interesting, though, is we didn't have members just from the area where Dunning Mountain was located. There were people already concerned about projects in Somerset County and other places in Pennsylvania and didn't really have anywhere to turn, so they became members of SOAR. So it never really was just a little NIMBY group fighting one project. We always had a number of projects on the horizon that we were dealing with.
And I suppose there are still projects that are upcoming that you guys still will be having to tackle.
Yes, there are. It's quite really an anomaly that three projects were canceled really within the last month. And so we're still concerned about quite a few other projects slated for Pennsylvania.
Hmm. Now, let me get you to fast forward a little bit. And I want to take this from a slightly different perspective, which is if you had to say what were the most important elements in your toolbox that really helped you to win the battle and that might be helpful for others that are facing similar battles?
We really had a multifaceted approach on these, on all of these projects. We didn't really concentrate on one issue. We looked at everything. We analyzed noise. We paid, in some cases, for noise studies. Not on all the projects, but in some of them. We looked at wildlife impacts. We looked at watershed impacts. And Schaefer Mountain was going to impact the watershed of at least two municipalities that depended on this area for their water. Plus, it was also an exceptional value watershed for two streams. So watershed was always something that we look at as far as impact. We look at impacts to communities in terms of boundary property disputes. Is there any type of contention there that might be useful in courts in fighting that? So we don't concentrate on just one issue. We try to look at all the complexities that are involved in a wind siting project. And then we try to focus on a couple that we think might be more successful to fight. And in the case of the Dunning Mountain project, it turned out that there really weren't many wildlife impacts, but it would have impacted a historical district. And so that's one thing that we utilized. And also there were property boundary disputes for that one. Whereas on Schaefer Mountain, yes, there were the watershed impacts, which would have been significant. And there were also impacts to a small amount of wetlands and a small amount of stream. And that actually brought in the Army Corps of Engineers, which played a fairly big role later on. But what really struck us with the Schaefer Mountain project was at the first hearing, the first public hearing with DEP, one of the project consultants who did an environmental study on bat impacts and did some misnetting of bats, found two juvenile Indiana bats in one of their misnetting projects.
Now, what are Indiana bats doing in Pennsylvania?
Indiana bats are federally endangered bats, and they live in Pennsylvania as well as other places in the East. And they're not very common, of course, that's why they're endangered. And we know we have Indiana bats in Pennsylvania. In some cases, we've had some fairly significant colonies, comparatively speaking. But the fact that they found, actually, they found the two juveniles, and they did find some adult Indiana bats, too. So that was really significant.
So, go ahead. What was the significance?
Well, now we realize that we should be looking at this from the impacts on an endangered species.
Okay.
And I had taught school for many years, environmental science. I taught a big unit on the Endangered Species Act, how important that was to protect species who are in danger of extinction. So I immediately thought, oh, well, case closed. They're never going to be able to put turbines on Schaefer Mountain because they might be killing Indiana bats.
Okay, so that happened, right? That was it. End of story, right?
Well,
no.
Actually, no. it turns out that it's not quite that simple because there's the word take, incidental take permits.
Okay, so an incidental take permit, if I understand it, it's issued by, who runs that? Is it the Forest Service or who? Fish and Wildlife, is that?
Right, that's the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Okay, so the National Fish and Wildlife Service, they can give a permit to anyone, really, I guess, that applies, that lets them kill an Indiana bird, bat, or or a peninsula bighorn sheep or a golden eagle or any of these other endangered, federally listed endangered species, if it's incidental to some, public good? Is that basically how it works? Or is that what an incidental take permit is?
Right. It has to be, the activity has to be lawful to begin with.
Okay. So you can't build a still in the woods and you accidentally kill a
bat.
Right. But so what happened? They applied for one of these things, the GAMESA?
Well, I've never seen the paperwork where they actually applied for that. We assume they did.
Okay.
But we didn't really wait for them to apply. Instead, we contacted law firms, and one of the first law firms we contacted was Tucker Arnsberg in Pittsburgh, and I have to thank Brad Tupi, the attorney who worked with us on this issue, because he was very diligent in bringing attention to the Indiana bat as well as impacts to migratory raptors, too, because the Allegheny Front's a really important migratory pathway for golden eagles and bald eagles and other raptors.
Hmm.
So one of the first things we did was we notified Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection that this finding of the endangered species is definitely significant and that we did not feel any permit should be issued to GAMESA until this whole issue of the endangered species was rectified, because we were concerned that due to political pressure, the Department of Environmental Protection might issue a permit. As it turned out, GAMESA had to apply 3 different times for the permit, and they never have received it. So that was a long...
Laura, I just wanted to ask a quick question, though, in terms of the timing. It appears that the project, at least on the local level, was approved way back in 2006. Is the timing that you're talking about now for when the Indiana bat... When did you say that happened? The finding of an Indiana bat?
We had... Let me make sure I have this correct here. We had a DEP hearing, and that was in August of... And I will check my notes to make sure, because I don't want to give you incorrect information, but it was in 2007, I believe. And okay. So when you say local...
At least the planning county planners had approved the project. Now, I'm not sure if they have what authority they have other than to say they have the right to build, because it appeared in the press that GAMESA was ready to start building the project in 2007, so this had to have stopped it in its tracks.
Well, it's complicated in Pennsylvania. There is authority on the local level by townships to grant permits, but they can't really grant the permit until the state issues. In this case, it was an individual NPDES permit, National Pollution Elimination Discharge system, so which dealt with stormwater management.
Okay.
And so, yes, the township might have an ordinance that would permit GAMESA from coming in, or that would allow them to come in and build, but they can't do anything until they get the NPDES permit from the Department of Environmental Protection.
Hmm.
Now,
A
local landowner started timbering his property in anticipation of getting this permit, and DEP actually stepped in and stopped the timbering. But really, the state NPDES permit, which is actually under the federal EPA permitting process, is what allows construction to occur like this. And so that was never, ever issued by the state, which was fortunate.
So this guy just couldn't wait to clear his land off and... They stopped him. So the Fish and Wildlife Service, did they get involved eventually on the bat issue?
Yes, they did. And landowners, as well as some conservation groups, filed several intent to sue with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And what was really helpful in that respect was that Meyer Glitzenstein and Crystal, which is one of the top environmental law firms in the nation, agreed to take our case against Schaefer Mountain Wind. And so they, in 2008...
How did you get them to do that?
Well, I think they saw the concern over the federally endangered Indiana bat. They're very, very prominently involved with endangered species issues.
Okay.
And I think they could see that, plus the fact that this was going in on a migratory pathway for golden eagles and bald eagles.
Hmm.
So I think in contacting them, they saw right away how valid this concern was that we had with the endangered species. And so in 2008, they served a formal notice of intent to actually bring federal litigation over violations of the Endangered Species Act because of the Indiana bat and the golden eagles and other federally protected species.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh attorney continued working with DEP, reminding them that they should not be issuing any permits because of this endangered species issue. So we were really working on two fronts. We were working statewide with our Pittsburgh attorney and then nationally or federally with Meyer Glitzenstein and Crystal.
Hmm.
Needless to say, people were very generous with their donations. This took hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
So that's another thing I'd like to point out is that when people start getting concerned about a wind project, it's very difficult to fight unless you have a lot of money. And fortunately, the community stepped up and people were willing to donate. There were rumors swirling around that we were getting money from coal companies or oil companies, and that was never true at all. These were ordinary people who were willing to sacrifice and donate money to a good cause because they cared a lot about Schaefer Mountain and they didn't want to see it degraded by Industrial One Project. And that's the same case with Dunning Mountain. People that lived in the national, I'm sorry, right now it's still a state historical district. It's going to be hopefully national within the next year or so. But people who lived in Dutch Corner, which is the rural historic district below Dunning Mountain, also sacrificed a tremendous amount of money to try to stop these projects, the Dunning Mountain Project. So it takes a big financial commitment, and that's very difficult to come up with money to fight these corporations for so long. But that was one other tactic, too, that trying to delay the projects really does cost the corporations money. And as the years went on, we thought to ourselves, why don't they just back out? But even in 2009, Gamesa was still calling Schaefer Mountain a priority project. They didn't want to give it up.
Well, do you think on some level they see these fights as precedent setting? So if they lose one, it feels like maybe it'll set a precedent for some other group that might want to actually tackle them and not just give in.
Right. That's exactly what we thought, too. And at the same time, we thought it was also a precedent for Pennsylvania if it did go in because of all the environmental impacts Schaefer Mountain would have on the exceptional value streams, the watersheds, the endangered species. We thought if this project goes in, there isn't any place in Pennsylvania that could keep out a wind project. So
delay is an important tool.
Delay is a very important tool, and people need to realize that they need to look at all of the issues that are involved. They need to research deeds. They need to find out if there are any property boundaries under dispute. They need to research watershed impacts, endangered species impacts, and they need to be very diligent in communicating with their environmental agency at the state level, because we found that our letters on a regular basis and our phone calls to the Department of Environmental Protection really seemed to make a difference. Those regulators knew that people here cared about the species and the watershed, and I think it kept our concern. Our concerns made it more of their concern too. There was a lot of political pressure in Pennsylvania to approve these projects as quickly as possible.
Well, haven't you got a little bit of a revolving door going on there with Rendell and I guess there are at least one other person that, having left, they now work sort of in the wind development industry, right?
That's right. There are a number of people that actually even worked in DEP, Governor Rendell, state legislator is a lobbyist for a previous state legislator. Is a lobbyist for Gamesa, the last time I heard. And so, yeah, it's very difficult to fight that.
So politically, were you sort of battling upstream with your representatives, the people?
Well,
that...
fortunately, our local representatives, and I'd like to give credit to Senator Eichelberger and Representative Hess, both of them got on board very quickly with these projects when we explained to them our concerns, and they could understand that. So they were very supportive. Both of our legislators wrote letters to the Fish and Boat Commission in regards to the Dunning Mountain project over concerns of rattlesnake impacts and historic impacts. Now, I can't say so much for the legislators who represent Somerset County, where the Schaefer Mountain Wind Project was mostly cited. We did not get support from those legislators. But the ones that were representing Bedford County were very helpful.
Well, I have to say that we're kind of out of time here, Laura. But
thank
you.
Oh, I've just touched the surface.
Oh, I know. But it is heartening. It is good news. And I do appreciate you coming on to share all of that good news with us, and to all of the people that were involved in the fight. I just want to say thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. And if anybody has any specific questions, just go on to the SaveOurAlleghenyRidges.org website and email me, and I will be glad to answer any emails that I get.
Thank you, Laura.
Do you have any
other questions, Lisa? Or
no, I think she did a great job covering what happened.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
I'm sure I will talk soon, and thank you for coming on Windwise Radio. Our next segment is going to be with a Vietnam era veteran named Bernie Hagen. Bernie has been subjected to, I don't know what how to exactly explain it, but subjected to more than anyone should. And we're going to hear his story coming up right now. Bernie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Harley.
Good evening, Bernie. Thanks for dialing in.
And thank you very much for covering this. I really appreciate what you and Lisa, your wife, are doing.
Lisa Linos is the executive director of Wind Action, Industrial Wind Action, which is a national advocacy group for this issue. And my wife is actually screening calls, so you probably talked to Marie just a moment ago on the phone when you first dialed in.
Yep.
First of all, happy Father's Day, Bernie.
And same to you, Harley. Have a good Father's Day here.
Thank you. So you live in, what's the name of the town?
I live in Heartland Township.
Heartland Township of Minnesota.
Of Freeborn County, Minnesota. It's a southern tier county.
Okay.
Southern tier county of Minnesota.
Now you've been there for over 30 years.
Yes, I have. 32 years.
But you were raised very close by.
Yes, I was raised on the other end of the county by Emmons, which is about 25 miles away.
So you've been there all of your life except for some time that you spent in the service.
Yes, when I was in the Army.
So you were in the Army during the period of the Vietnam War.
Yes, I was.
And thank you again for your service. And during that time period, although we don't have to talk, we don't have a lot of time to talk about that because I want to get on to other things. You were injured. Your hearing actually was infected, and as a result, you have tinnitus, and you are very susceptible to developing that sort of ringing in the ears and those kinds of problems. That's right?
Yes, I have tinnitus, and I have the ringing in the ears, and the doctors up to the Minneapolis Veterans Administration wrote a letter explaining my problem, and I wouldn't be able to live in the middle of a wind turbine complex. They wrote that in June of 2009.
So in June 2009. Okay, so they write this letter in June of 2009. You had already heard at that point that there were going to be this large wind turbine development very close to your home. Is that 120 or 22
turbines?
And of course, it's been built now, despite the fact that you had a letter from your doctor, from the Veterans Administration, stating that you were susceptible to this due to service-related incidents, and yet they went ahead anyway, and they put at least three turbines very close to your home. How far away is the nearest turbine?
The nearest one is 1,500. 1,540 feet. The next one is 1,686 feet. The third one is 2,000 feet. And there's 119 more. And if I walked around my yard, which I did today, I can count 116 of these from my yard.
Oh. Holy mackerel. So the darn things get turned on, and have you been impacted? Has your health been impacted?
Oh, very much so. Like the doctors at the VA said, I have sleep deprivation, nausea. My vertigo is real bad. Sometimes when I get up at night, gee, it's just like you've been drinking, you know, fall against the wall and you got to be real careful so you don't fall and hurt yourself. And my blood pressure is up, and it's fatigue from no sleep, and it makes you irritable and all kinds of stuff that if you don't get an adequate amount of sleep causes.
Now your doctors have recommend. What are they recommending for you now?
Well, now they're saying if I can't get bought out, if I can't get any resolution, I should walk away. And they're also telling me I should leave a few days a week.
So I should not
stay here all the time because it gets worse the more I stay.
So when you leave your home, and you travel a few miles away, do you start to get relief from your symptoms?
Oh yeah, it helps. You bet. The longer you stay away, the more it helps.
Huh.
Bernie, I have a question for you. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
That's okay.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay, I'm fascinated that your doctors were telling you that there was a potential problem even before it was built, because people were not giving much credibility to Dr. Pierpont's work on wind turbine syndrome. Certainly not in 2009. Not doctored, not unless, except for those that were directly involved with wind energy issues. So you did find receptive doctors to the concern. Did you have to educate them about the concerns, or were they aware of wind turbine issues from other patients?
They were aware, and then they drove down to southern Minnesota here, and Moore County was one of the few places they had wind turbines, and also in Iowa, in Worth County. They had some, so they drove down and looked them over and did some different tests on different stuff and came to the conclusion. And
really?
Yes, they were really on top of it.
That's very interesting. And if they, do you know if they've done, if they have other patients that are experiencing similar issues?
Well, I'll tell you, if they do, they are under such pressure right now. They are under such pressure right now that they're not saying. I talked to the one doctor, and they've been threatened if they keep helping me, if their job is in jeopardy.
Really?
Well,
yes.
Well, if I could ask one other question, then Mary Hartman, who put us in touch with you, had mentioned to me that she was sat in Congressman Tim Walz's office. Is it Walz or Walz?
Yeah,
and he talked. He had, in fact, set up a meeting in Washington to discuss the issues that you've been facing, but then did not attend the meeting. What is happening there? Because he has gone on record as supporting extension of the production tax credit, further development of wind energy. Is he acknowledging the issue, the health issue?
No, he's trying to skirt it. He does not want to meet with me. He does not want to talk to me. He does everything he can to stay away from me. He does not want to help me. When I've talked to him, they can't talk to me unless they tell me how for green energy they are.
Hmm.
And they let me know every time they're for green energy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's for big business. He's not for helping
for the
me.
People. For
yeah,
the
he's
people.
Not for helping me.
Well,
he's for the people,
but that doesn't sound like it to me. Sounds to me like he has some political ambitions and
yes, he does.
And veterans be damned. I don't know. This makes my blood boil. I'm sorry. I'm just.
Well,
that's not,
mine too, Harley.
Yeah, I can hear that. I can hear the frustration in your voice, I know this is a very difficult situation for you guys, and the idea that you guys would be forced to be in your house, just save yourself. It's ridiculous. Bernie, we have to run along again. I every time we hear from you, I want to talk to you longer, but we've kind of run out of time again. I don't know. Maybe we'll do round three, and talk to you again. I will call you, and I want to talk to you personally a little bit more about this and see what we can do to get your issue more visibility, because I think it's just really wrong what's happening. Thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Thanks, Bernie.
You bet. Thank you guys very much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And you and Cheryl take care, okay?
Okay, you bet.
I'll be
Thank
in-
you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, huh, Lisa?
Wow, that is really sad.
It's really sad and really makes me angry. It's hard to fathom how morally bankrupt that is,
mm-hmm.
Whatever I can do to raise the visibility of this and whatever that Tim Walz's problem is, so he needs to find his soul, as far as I can tell. All right. I'm going to take my blood pressure medicine and then we'll move on to the next segment. Can you introduce our guest?
Yes, of course. Josh, are you there? Is he here?
He is. Let me see if I can get him.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Lisa.
Lisa and Harley, we're really glad that you can join us today. What we wanted to talk about was the AWEA policy document that you came across, and then a little bit about AWEA's tactics, what we've learned from that document and from actual activities we've seen in the press involving lobbying by the American Wind Energy Association. And if you could talk to us a little bit about the document first, how you found it, what it is, and then we can take it from there and you'll have a discussion about it.
Sure. From my perspective,
Josh, you first have to tell us who you are.
Sure.
Where are you located in your organization?
Sure. Again, my name is Josh Van Camp. I'm with the Interstate Informed Citizens Coalition, or IICC. We're a group that was formed in southeast Michigan in Lenawee County, which is just outside of Toledo, Ohio, and like southwest of Ann Arbor. And we faced a large-scale wind development down here from three different developers that we've since been able to kind of turn the tide on, want to put in places, ordinances that require non-participating people to be safely protected. Usually the wind developers take their ball and go elsewhere, and that's what they did here in Lenawee County. Since then, myself and other members of the IICC have been as active as time allows in wind energy policy issues, and I think one of the things that our group has always been firm believers in is in engaging and being active participants in this process. And as part of that, here earlier in March, I actually attended one of the AWEA conference. There was a AWEA Regional Wind Energy Summit Midwest, which I attended as a member of an environmental NGO that I belong to. So I was able to go in there and kind of see how AWEA works, at least here on a regional level, and kind of hear some of the things that were being said. And as far as the policy document, what kind of struck me was that they sent an email out that had some information about some of the presenters there that were sent out in PDF form, and they just linked back to the AWEA website. So I had the idea just taking Google and doing some searches across the AWEA domain to see if I could find some more documents that might be of interest. And sure enough,
you're
AWEA...
Josh, you're just doing like a public... Google
sure.
search on the public access areas of AWEA.org.
Exactly. If you take Google's advanced search tools, they actually give you the ability to search on a specific domain. So in this instance, I was searching just AWEA's website and just looking for any PDFs that they have out there. You know, I've always said that I think it's important to know all sides of the argument, even the other side. And I've always been very apt to read wind company material and just see their arguments and process those things. And I had done a search for siting. I was interested in siting practices. That was a big issue here locally. And did a search for siting and PDFs related to siting across the AWEA domain. And a number of PDFs come up, including one that I found that... was a document that seemed to be a fairly comprehensive policy document, and then kind of discussing it with other people, it seems like it's a fairly comprehensive document that kind of discusses not only AWEA's siting policy strategy and things that they're doing on that front, but on literally every front that AWEA is engaged in.
Now, this document is out there. I mean, did you fall out of your chair? Because I almost did when I saw it.
Yeah, it's not for me to judge why AWEA posted that on the public website, but it was publicly available. And I, you know, like you said, I don't want anyone to think I had done anything, illegal or anything. So I was very careful to document what I did and showed that, this was a regular Google search and, you know, nothing underhanded or anything, just publicly available information. And I was very surprised that they would post something like that to the web. But the depth and breadth of that document is really amazing. You know, I strongly encourage anyone to go out there to I think you have a link actually on the windwiseradio.org website that has a link to the document. And
yes.
take a look through there. It's so much material. I mean, you could put several shows together on the contents of that document.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I when I first saw it, I was like, I was actually reeling a little bit from it. I mean, I always say that, like, I knew that they were doing all this stuff. I knew they had a lot of money, but it's different when you actually see it in black and white and you see how much money they have and what they're spending it on. And also, like you say, it's a very detailed document and they cover all the bases. I mean, it's a very sophisticated press public relations document included in this. It's a strategy document. But of course, it's really a good, almost like learning tool for if you wanted to know how a corporation goes about influencing policies.
Sure.
I mean, this is how they do it, you know, and it's, you know, it's in all of its glory, you know, I can use that word.
Well, I think it does go a long way in looking at, if you go and kind of pursue the document, even on a page-by-page basis, you can see where the wind industry is aware that they have some definite shortcomings and some issues that they just try to gloss over by trying to work it as a PR issue with politicians. And if you go through that document, you can see almost point by point where they know their arguments are weak or don't really hold any water, and those are the areas that they've tried to patch over and have third-party non-government organizations sell for them. They talk about on page 52 there, they had people writing third-party op-eds where they were actually coordinating these opinion pieces that, you know, to an average reader, when they see, Mr. Brownback out of Kansas writing a pro-wind op-ed, it looks like he's just done this of his own accord. But you find out here in reading
on
the policy
his spare
document,
time on the weekend or something, right?
Yeah, this was done at the suggestion of AWEA.
Not just a suggestion, I'm sure AWEA wrote the letter. And it was, in fact, there is a statement right there that says, worked with third parties such as Kansas Governor Brownback and T. Boone Pickens to place pro-wind op-eds in leading media. Right, so, in the document.
So there's also something that's quite missing from this document, and that seems to me to be any concern for the environment. There, you know, you go through this very, very long document, and there's nothing in there that is, oh yeah, and we want to save the planet.
Oh no, it's amazing. I think for the people that we've dealt with here locally, you know, the wind people that are opposed to the wind developments, at least in our experience, have been very much across the political spectrum. Everyone from conservatives, free market libertarians, to people of a more liberal persuasion or environmentalist folks that look at and see that the wind industry is willing and able to kind of walk over environmental research as it pertains to bats and other avian concerns if it stands in the way. I mean, that, again, is in the document. It talks about they were able to get a hold of a leaked copy of the Eagle draft that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service put out. So they had advanced time to work on generating comments on that. There was a section in
and
there
they didn't, and they didn't and they didn't like it either. They didn't like what was in there, so they went all out, right? They went above the people, the civil servants that were, you know, trying to conscientiously draft something, and they went straight to the top to Salazar, right? And basically, you know, underlined it. Yeah.
Yeah, you see the same thing too with the bats. I think on page I noted here 40 or 41, it talks about working against the listing of additional bats. Obviously, the bats, as you guys have already talked about tonight, are a big concern in certain areas. There are a number of different bat species. I know even here in Michigan that are on the threshold of being listed. And if they were to be listed, would create even more problems for the wind industry. And again, this document talks, they've worked actively against having those bats listed because it would create a problem for them.
Yeah, a business problem. It would be a money problem.
Yeah, it's a business problem.
It's not a problem of, oh, well, maybe we ought to not build these things because we're about to make some species of bat extinct. You know, that wouldn't be in the list of concerns, right?
Yeah.
Correct. It's barriers to siting. That's what these represent to the wind industry.
And barriers to siding is code word for we won't make as much money.
That's right. And I think this document serves an important purpose if we're able to get it out and show it to more people, especially people that maybe have supported wind from an environmental perspective, to show them that at the end of the day, this is a business like any business, and they're going to do what they have to do to maximize shareholder returns. Their goal is not to increase the number of bats or environmental responsibility. It's to return money to their shareholders and to their companies. And as such, they're willing to play the same games that they accuse other industries of doing. And I think that there are a certain percentage of people that I think we could really open their eyes to and maybe make them ask tougher questions and make them be more responsible, so that at the end of the day, in environmental issues and in other issues, that these wind folks have to, their projects have to show the full cost, the full social cost, the full environmental cost in terms of what it's actually doing, instead of being all the, you know, I've said here locally a lot of times, people use this the warm rhetorical blanket of green energy, and you pull it around yourself and say, well, it's wind, it's green, doesn't it? It just feels good, right? You know, and it gets a free pass. And,
yeah,
you know,
and they should be, there should be a level playing field. They're a corporation. They want to make money. They should have to jump through all the same hoops as everybody else.
Exactly.
And they should not be, they should not get, you know, this extra sort of push just because they're claiming the green mantle. And of course, it's kind of a perfect storm too. You know, you have in the sense that you have them reaching out to the Republican side, the Democratic side, all sides politically. They're working with, you know, it's just like the Sierra Club, for example. You know, this would be a traditional person that would be like, wait, we want to see what's going on, and we're going to put our weight behind making sure you're crossing all your T's and dotting all your I's on all these environmental impact statements. They're just like, well, we need you. You're green. And it's, so there's this sort of perfect storm of consensus being that they've successfully built for themselves. And the impact, of course, is that they're getting a free pass
exactly.
In a lot of ways, and special treatment.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama ends up showing up in Iowa at an ex-sailboat manufacturer that now makes turbine blades, and, you know, spouting, you know, what could have come straight from this WEA document about, you know, this is good green jobs for the country kind of stuff, with no mention of any of the impacts that could possibly be going on. There's no mention of what's happening, for example, to Bernie Hagan in Minnesota and his wife and their health problems, or the people in Falmouth or anywhere else. So it's just to me, it's really quite astonishing.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
One thing I want to talk about a little bit is that a lot of people don't realize that the American Wind Energy Association is a not-for-profit charitable organization. It's educating. That's what they claim to do. Their mission is to advocate for and educate people about the benefits of wind energy. But they have a wind pack, which
mm-hmm.
is actually involved in the fundraising. So, Josh, you want to talk a little bit about that? Because some of the representatives that are cited and senators that are cited in the document that have the AWEA assisted in raising funds for
mm-hmm.
are actually actively involved in pushing the production tax credit extension.
Oh, certainly. It's been a little while since I picked up the document to look at some of the political side stuff, but I know that just looking here at the blurb that you guys had on the website, that there are were a number of politicians that they'd signed up and had then actively tried to pull them into the camp, some probably more successfully than others. Some of them have kind of stepped by the wayside or been voted to the wayside. I'm looking at Richard Lugar there in Indiana. I know recently lost his primary election, so that was good for our side. But the engagement of the politicians is huge. I know that when I went to the WEA conference in Chicago, that was one of the big topics they talked about was engaging politicians, particularly Republican politicians, because those are the folks that tend to view wind more skeptically, usually because of the subsidy issues, but they really were pushing hard, trying to sell Republican politicians on that sort of thing, and you do see them peeling some people away and voting for some issues that, at least in my opinion, wouldn't traditionally be Republican issues, but in some ways it kind of mirrors the ethanol industry and some of the subsidy-driven stuff that you have there.
Well, and I wanted to mention a couple of them that I'm a little bit worried about because we've seen direct action by them. One of them is Majority Whip Kevin McCarthy out of the House, and he is a Republican from California, also representing the area of Tehachapi, where we have a lot of wind projects. They mm-hmm. helped raise $20,000 for him, and he went on record a couple of weeks ago stating that he supports an all-of-the-above energy platform. This is, again, the majority whip. He's third in line in the House and stating, we will do wind, but we will do the Keystone as well as solar and coal. So he is pushing for the production tax credit as part of the Republican leadership. We're also seeing that Dave Camp, who is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in the House, mm-hmm. That's where any extension of the production tax credit, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen out of Ways and Means first. And they raised $23,000 for him. We haven't heard anything from Representative Camp, Chairman Camp. So he's out of Michigan, your state, and so we're a little worried about him. Jerry Moran, Senator out of Kansas, is introduced the amendment to extend the wind energy production tax credit. Earl Baum, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, named Blumenauer, a Democrat of Oregon, also was one of the co-sponsors of a bill in the House now to extend the production tax credit for 4 years. And it goes on. So these are individuals in the House and the Senate who receive or assisted in raising funding and are direct actions taking place in the House and the Senate today. That's quite worrisome.
Sure. Yeah, that's always been the threat here, is that with the all-above solution is that some of the politicians will go along with wind in exchange for getting some of the other measures, like you said, the Keystone Pipeline and some of the other measures that it'll be just one big happy party, unfortunately.
Right. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, and
yep.
We can all
everyone will be happy.
Yeah, we'll all get reelected.
They had a way of disenfranchising the rest of us, and that's where we really need to get our voices out there.
So Lisa, let me. I'm just going to ask you a question. What do you think the chances are of the production tax credit being renewed before it expires?
Right now, I think we're looking at a 50-50 chance. A couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, it was a better than 50% chance it would not be extended. But then, they pulled out all the WEA has pulled out all the stops, and they're pushing very hard. But the likelihood of anything happening in terms of bills being passed or any amendments to bills that are being passed that look at a PTC being extended will likely happen during the lame duck, that it's after the election in November. And even then, it's going to be such a it's going to be a very busy time. So we're not sure, but we're thinking of 50-50 right now.
Yeah. Well, can I throw a comment in there real quick, too?
Sure, absolutely.
About the RPS or the PTC that I think is very valid. Like Lisa said, there's a lot of uncertainty whether that's going to happen. And that was another thing that was addressed at that conference that I attended in Chicago. It was at the end of the day, and several wind company executives made this point from the podium, they said, that we'd like to have the PTC, but at the end of the day, we realize that may go away. But at the end of the day, as long as you, and he's addressing the crowd there, as long as you're going out and addressing these state RPSs and keep driving demand, it isn't going to matter. These projects are still going to be built, implying that with the captive markets they're able to create with RPSs, various statewide RPSs, and ultimately I know that they would like to have a national RPS, the PTC is irrelevant. It will force costs up, and it may make it harder for them to kind of hide the ball like they've been able to do for a number of years. But at the end of the day, it's the RPSs that drive this thing.
That's interesting.
Josh is exactly right. And what's going to happen is there will be a transition. Some of those small players will fall out, maybe get bought out. Their projects will disappear, especially if they're in and states that do not have RPS policies, although we see most of them being built where there are RPSs. Wind's not going to fall flat as long as there is a forced market for the energy,
sure.
And that's what RPS policies create.
Right. It may become a little less profitable, but it's still going to be lucrative to do it. And since that's what they're all about, that's
yep.
what they'll continue to do.
it's in that policy document. Again, anyone listening to the show tonight, go out to windwiseradio.org and look for the link to that AWIA document, and you can see them talking about driving RPSs. It's in there, too. It's all
yes.
in there.
Yes, and I agree with you, Josh. I think everybody should be reading that document. Maybe they should print it out, put it on their nightstand, or, you know, maybe to make good bathroom reading or something. I think it's definitely. I'm going to make sure that link is very prominently displayed. Keep it on the homepage of our site, and hopefully everybody will get a good look at it. And I think you're right. I think that we'll be talking about this issue for many shows to come up. Josh, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And maybe I'll see you at the next AWIA conference.
You just might. You never know.
I'm gonna wear dark glasses, and I'll be the guy with the video camera.
Okay.
And the King Kong Kills turban T-shirt. Maybe they won't let me in. I don't know. Lisa, thank you again for participating and being here. It's really good to have you on with me. And what will we do next week?
Well, we'll have to work on that.
Okay. I'm sure there's always something going on with this crazy issue that we have latched onto. There's so much going on, many, many important stories. And if any of our listeners have a story that they'd like to be focusing on that we're missing, please send an email to us or make a comment on our Facebook. And if you haven't liked our Facebook, go ahead and do that too. So I'm going to say good night. Good night to everybody.
Good night.
Good night, Lisa. Good night, Josh. This is Windwise Radio signing off.